YouTube channel, or they block my Twitter or something. Now, obviously, that's just lame. Now, the idea was that me and you, we have to also preach out. We have to reach out to people. We have to talk to people. We have to make sure that we are doing God's work on earth, because it is not always me and me. The idea when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala said, إِنِّي جَعَلٌ فِي الْأَرْضِ خَلِيفَ, I'm placing a vicegerent on earth. The idea was that me and you are these vicegerents. We are the guardians of Allah on earth. I mean, each one obviously has a role to play. So I and you have to also be among those who want to guide people, want to help people, want to show them the right path, and don't say, it's not mine. Allah, in fact, emphasizes on that fact. And it says, اَدْعُوا إِلَىٰ سَبِيلِ رَبِّكَ بِالْحِكْمَةِ وَالْمَوْعَظَةِ الْحَسَنَةِ. Call people into the path of your Lord, right? With wisdom and a nice word, a nice manner. We are instructed to do so. This is instruction not just to the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam, but in fact to each one of us, that we have to do our job in terms of trying to guide people and bring people to the right path. So we have to begin, obviously, first and foremost, with our families and the people that we love who are close to us, and then the circle goes bigger and bigger. Now, just before we continue, let us take a short break, and then we will continue, inshallah.
You're listening to the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Bridge. Now, we said, Allah says, لَن تَنَالُوا الْبِرَّ حَتَّى تُنْفِقُوا مِمَّا تُحِبُّونَ. Allah will not give you heaven until you give from that which you love. And like I said, we love to be guided. Now, most people will, when they want to preach and they want to guide people, sometimes we face like hardships in that path. Sometimes, as much as like you ask a person or you tell a person to do the right thing, or you tell them this is wrong, or you're trying to put some sense into them, and all of a sudden you get told off, or you get screamed at, or you get sweared at or cursed or what have you. And sometimes that brings us down like really bad, right? You feel like so low and your self-esteem reaches zero. And you say, well, you know what? Stop it. Why would I bother? Seeing this happened in front of me when I was in the airport, where a guy helped some guy, and then he told him, then the other guy, he said, oh, what you did not help me, this and that. And the other guy, he got really upset, and he's like, you know what? He's like, it's my fault that I help people. I should never help people again. And he got really upset. Sometimes we have to keep an open mind and open heart in order for us to guide people, because it's not that easy. It's not that simple. So if you hear something bad from people, if people that do not take what you're saying to them, you know, in a nice manner, or they react in a bad manner towards you, you have to keep that in mind, that you're doing for the sake of Allah, and therefore you have to swallow your pride and swallow the pain and let it go, because we're trying to help people. Like when you look at the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa sallam, he was called the Majnoon in the Quran, he was called the Sahir in the Quran, he was called many names. But did that deter him from guiding people? No, it didn't. So we should also do the same when it comes to trying to help people be guided as much as ourselves. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Al Musavi in the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio.
هرگز نگیرد تا ابد آقا کسی جای تو را، هرگز مخواد از کف دهم عشق و تولای تو را.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
During his first speech as British Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak used the occasion to issue a call for unity. Sunak must find a way to quickly unite not just a bitterly divided Conservative Party, but also a deeply troubled nation. However, he also issued warnings of difficult times ahead.
I will place economic stability and confidence at the heart of this government's agenda. This will mean difficult decisions to come.
The Prime Minister has inherited a country in crisis. Energy prices are high, cost of living through the roof, and millions of Brits are expected to struggle this winter. Another worry for Sunak, Conservative Party popularity has plummeted in recent months, sitting approximately 30 points behind the opposition Labour Party. Sunak's supporters say he's economically experienced from his days as Chancellor, and praised Sunak as Britain's youngest leader in 200 years and the first ever non-white leader. But his critics claim that's just not enough.
He definitely has the credentials. He definitely has the experience, been there in the, as Chancellor before. But again, we need to understand, you know, where does he sit right here, right now, with everyday voters? He has not been elected by the people. As well as most people feel that he cannot resonate with the ones that are struggling. I'm not sure if it is real representation for anyone of a minority background, especially when he comes from a very, very elitist club, and he does not really represent many. He's probably top 1% of majority of brown people or Asians, whatever you want to call it, in the entire world. So it's very difficult to sort of resonate and feel sort of close in that way.
Many challenges lie ahead for the new Prime Minister, in particular how he's going to overcome Britain's many economic crises. However, even if he does find a way to overcome Britain's economic woes, question marks still remain surrounding if he has what it takes to win the Conservatives the next general election. Robert Carter, London.
NGC 23 is a remote galaxy which is more than 200 million light-years away from Earth. What's even more interesting is that the interstellar object was observed by none of the celebrity telescopes like James Webb, but by a new indigenous Iranian observatory called INO, short for Iranian National Observatory, marking a milestone in the country's quest for deep space.
Within 3 weeks ago, which we got the first light, the so-called first light, we had no idea about the quality of the image we are going to get, and it was excellent.
Another debut image shot by the 3.4-meter optical telescope is ARP-282, an interacting galaxy pair located approximately 320 million light-years away. Scientists at the Iranian National Observatory say their telescope could see objects as far as 7 billion light-years away.
Of course, we can use this telescope to observe even deeper objects, but the highest quality of this telescope can be achieved up to 7 billion light-years away from us.
INL is built on Mount Gargash, north of the city of Isfahan, at a height of 3,600 meters above sea level. The project was initiated about 15 years ago, aiming at the development of a medium-class telescope to provide a research facility for national users.
In the next coming months, and especially in the next year, the telescope will be delivered to the astronomers as the end user of this expensive and complex instrument.
Constructing INO was the result of complicated scientific and technological efforts, but there was even a tougher challenge, U.S. sanctions. The anti-Iran measures block high-tech imports and access to foreign know-how. The Iranian team purchased the glass mirror blanks from a German firm, but then had to figure out how to construct nearly everything else on their own.
Due to U.S. sanctions and some financial problems, they cut their relation with us, and we did the rest of project within last 12 years by ourselves.
INO is still not fully developed. Engineers need to integrate software, fine-tune the active optics, and install the first science instrument, a high-resolution imaging camera. Once completed, the telescope will help scientists understand galaxy formation and stellar evolution, and hunt for exoplanets.
With INO, Iran has marked its first giant leap in space exploration and has fairly entered the world space race. The telescope's builders are now thrilled to announce that they will soon release more stunning images of deep space, hoping to help the world catch a glimpse of the wonders of our universe. Yusuf Jalalip, Tehran.
Thousands of mourners took to the streets of Nablus in the occupied West Bank to bid farewell to Palestinians killed by Israeli forces. Early Tuesday, clashes broke out between Palestinian fighters and Israeli forces after regime forces conducted a raid in Nablus. Several Palestinians were killed in the raid. Among the victims was Wadi Hawah, a fighter for the newly formed resistance group Lion's Den. 21 other Palestinians were also wounded in the attack, some of them in critical condition.
Those Palestinian young men will not be defeated by the Israeli war machinery. The Israeli occupation will pay a high price for its crimes. The response will be in the field. The flag of Wadi Hawa and other martyrs will continue flying every day, and more Palestinian heroes will be born.
The Israeli army said it had carried out a vast operation with police and intelligence officers targeting a site used by the main operatives of the Lion's Den, describing it as a headquarters and a workshop for making weapons. Later on Tuesday, regime forces conducted another attack near Ramallah and killed one more Palestinian man. 19-year-old Qusay At-Tamimi was killed during a confrontation in the village of Nabi Saleh. Palestinian officials have condemned the raids as vicious and criminal, but they said such attacks will not break the will of the Palestinian people, who are adherent to resistance as their legitimate right.
Their attacks on Palestinians in Nablus and in Ramallah and in other places will not break the Palestinian will. It will not stop the Palestinian resistance. The Palestinians have understood very clearly that Israel understands only the language of force, and that's why they are ready to defend themselves and defend their rights.
All the Palestinians are in the same tunnel, facing the same atrocities, while the same war crimes are being committed all over the Palestinian territories. The Palestinians are unified through different forms of resistance.
Since the beginning of this year, over 130 Palestinians have been killed in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds.
The Israeli regime threatens to continue killing Palestinian resistance fighters under the pretext of battling terrorism. Palestinians, however, say they will remain steadfast in their resolve, stressing that the Israeli atrocities will not stop their resistance. Mona Qandil, occupied Ramallah.
The 18th General Assembly of the Organization of Asia-Pacific News Agencies gathered up members of the media entity in Tehran to discuss new trends in news production and explore areas of cooperation between its members.
So basically, OANA has now become somewhat of a center of world-balanced approach to journalism. Nowadays, it's quite difficult to find media companies outside of Asia and Africa who are looking for a balanced approach to news. Basically, a lot of the major media companies of the world have decided to play only for one side.
I'm from Lebanon's state news agency. I believe this summit provides a platform for media diplomacy between the member news agencies to reach common grounds on world affairs.
AWANA currently has 43 members from 35 countries, covering two-thirds of the world's population. As a member, the Islamic Republic News Agency, or shortly IRNA, is hosting this year's General Assembly, based on a voting that took place during the 17th AWANA Summit in Seoul, South Korea.
Today is a good opportunity for the representatives of prominent news agencies present in Tehran for the AWANA meeting to observe the conditions in Iran. An independent media current is needed to disseminate the realities.
Formed in 1961 on UNESCO's initiative, the Organization of Asia-Pacific News Agencies is an association of news agencies from UNESCO member states in the Asia-Pacific region. AWANA provides a newswire service containing articles provided by its members. Aside from IRNA, Iran's Fars News and Mehr News agencies are also among AWANA members.
Delegates here say AWANA's main goal is to break the Western monopoly on media and to present an alternative narrative on regional and global developments, as opposed to, quote, the narrative offered by mainstream media. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
The Russian flag now flies over Donetsk. As Russia claims this region is now part of the Russian Federation, the streets in the center are quiet. As Ukraine continues to bomb the city, the front line is only 6 kilometers away. In order to find out how people here feel about their new identity, I headed down the road to the adjoining city of Makiivka. There are more people on the streets, as it's safer here.
We are very happy. We've been waiting for it for a long time. We're very glad. All acquaintances, neighbors, all people surrounding me are grateful to Russia.
It's a complicated question. After everything that's been going on, it can be no other way now. There is no other way but to be with Russia. We were close people always. We couldn't be divided. We lived quite okay in Ukraine, but it's no longer Ukraine. Their authorities are not Ukrainian anymore.
This is a common sentiment in Donbass, that they were happy being part of Ukraine, but when the nationalists came to power in 2014 and began discriminating against Russian culture and bombing civilians here, they turned toward Russia.
We have been waiting for it. Donbass was eager to become part of Russia. We have the same values, culture, and now that we are part of Russia, we can be ourselves.
I'll tell the truth. While they've been shelling us and we were living in fear, in Kiev, they were enjoying themselves. Nobody in Kiev paid any attention. There are people there who support and understand us, but they cannot speak about it. They can be killed or imprisoned by the SBU for this. We're not against Ukrainian civilians. We are Ukrainian people too. I have relatives there. We have pity for people in Kiev, but nobody's killing them there on purpose.
Thousands have been killed by Ukrainian shelling over the last 8 years here. Hardly a day goes by without more civilians dying. Most of the anger I hear, though, is directed at the Ukrainian government, not its people.
I sympathize with them very much. I am always against people being killed, but it's war. Nothing can be done about it. They're killing us and we have to defend ourselves. Sometimes we had to hide in basements because of shelling. I work at school. Our school was under shelling. The windows were smashed. It's very scary.
Now, doing vox pops in cities on issues around the world, you usually get a variety of opinions. Not so here. Everybody I've spoken to says they want to join Russia. The only difference of opinion seems to be just how much sympathy they have for people in Kiev now living under shelling themselves, as the people here have been doing so for the last 8 years. While the southern regions of Zaporozhye and Kherson are more mixed, for peace to come, it's clear the world needs to accept that the vast majority of people in Donbass no longer want to be part of Ukraine. Jenny Miller, Donbass.
It's taken him a few weeks longer than anticipated, but former Chancellor Rishi Sunak is now the leader of the Conservative Party and Prime Minister-elect of the UK, and of course, the first ethnic minority to hold either position. In a rather stage-managed affair, Sunak made his first public address to the nation.
But there is no doubt we face a profound economic challenge. We now need stability and unity, and I will make it my utmost priority to bring our party and our country together.
Sunak had been the favoured candidate with fellow MPs in the leadership contest held in the summer, but had to settle for runner-up spot. This after Liz Truss won the vote of the Tory party members. This time, MPs saw to it that this was an internal matter, with voters looking on as yet another Conservative MP was anointed.
We had Johnston, we had Liz Truss very briefly, and now we have Sunak. Ordinary people in Britain have got no say over who becomes Prime Minister. That is a democratic deficit, and I think it sticks in the throats of many, many people in this country.
Sunak was keen to emphasise unity and stability, but those might be wishful ideas for a party that's literally at war with itself.
But there's been so much infighting within inside the Conservative Party, it's very difficult to see how they can all just lay down their knives and be friends again. Now, obviously, the sight of Labour running ahead, well ahead in the opinion polls will unite them. They're not lemmings, they don't want to commit suicide. That's why there won't be an election soon.
Prime Minister. Sunak's leadership will be tested by the presence of figures like former Prime Minister Boris Johnson, who claimed to have had the support to run for high office, but conceded now was not the right time for his return. How can Sunak ensure he doesn't follow the Liz Truss path to political collapse?
For many, the British premiership is a poison chalice. With the country facing one of the worst cost of living crises in a generation, with, of course, more austerity measures bound to be implemented and a political landscape more divided than ever, the new occupants of Downing Street face a Herculean task to try and pull Britain back from the brink.
Amina Taylor, London.
EU leaders at a summit in Brussels agreed China is becoming too assertive. It's the same phrase they have been using for years with respect to Russia. Iran was also in their sights. New restrictive measures against Tehran were rubber-stamped.
Sanctions have been taken against those who are participating in the repression of peaceful demonstrations, and this, of course, is linked to the support of Russia against Ukraine.
Analysts say the allegations against Iran are spurious and they are being vehemently contested. It's pointed out that the bloc sometimes ignores clear international law violations, even when there's zero ambiguity. For example, those perpetrated by Israel against Palestinians. The US is said to have even greater influence over the EU as the bloc moves to try and isolate Moscow and Beijing. It's suggested that has been Washington's plan all along.
Europe, they are totally dependent on the United States and in energy field and in military field. And that is dependency that doesn't allow them to conduct independent foreign policies.
Sanctions against Russia over the war in Ukraine have driven energy costs to unmanageable levels. A complex package has been agreed in principle by EU leaders to try and lower prices and demand.
There's a lot of work now ahead of us what the energy is concerned, but the roadmap is very clear. And it was good to have this unanimity, this broad support for the roadmap that we have put forward.
Leaders admit the energy package is very complex and will take up to 3 weeks to try and finalise. Will this summit deliver positive results for EU citizens? It's a crucial question for millions of households and businesses, but also a vital political question for the bloc's leaders. Extreme left and extreme right anti-EU parties are waiting in the wings. Ignoring massive corruption findings by their own financial watchdog, EU leaders have agreed to provide €18 billion to the Ukrainian government in 2023. But that's nothing compared to what they will spend on lethal weapons for the country's army. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
It's no land at the heart of a scorching but amazing island. Nowtown is one of the latest entertainment centers in Iran's Kish Island in the Persian Gulf. Every year, some 2 million visitors from inside and outside Iran visit the island to enjoy its attractions, from its entertainment centers
to its stunning beach.
The beach and the pier in Kish are really peaceful and tranquilizing. It's the third time I'm visiting the island, and I went parasailing, water skiing, and I'm planning to go scuba diving.
Kish Island offers all kinds of sea entertainment activities, from scuba diving to sailing, and oh yes, flyboarding. Besides sea sports, visitors can enjoy its amusement parks and a range of leisure activities inside the island. And if you're a tireless window shopper, Kish is a land of malls and shopping centers.
Kish is an amazing island. It used to be an abandoned island some three decades ago, but today it is a luxurious tourist resort with modern buildings and exciting recreational places.
Despite all the pleasure one can have in Kish, the island still has many shortcomings. The major issue annoying visitors is the poor accommodation services.
Hotel facilities and services are a bit weak given the large number of tourists that visit this island. They need to pay more attention to the accommodation infrastructure.
Just a few hundred kilometers away from Kish, there's a tourist magnet in the United Arab Emirates, Dubai, which absorbs the chunk of foreign tourists. While U.S. sanctions on Iran are a major factor to blame for Kish lagging behind in its rivalry with Dubai, the island's officials believe it still has a chance to win the game of tourism against Dubai.
If we want to excel, it is not going to be a tough job. We need to work on two major areas. The first is the infrastructure, and the second is regulations that would allow tourists or investors to easily come to Kish to entertain themselves or do business.
Situated off the southern coast of Iran in the Persian Gulf, Kish is one of Iran's free trade zones. Foreign travelers do not need a visa to visit the island, as travel permits are issued on arrival by Kish officials and are valid for up to 14 days.
With its mesmerizing nature and eye-catching urban landscapes, Kish has earned the title of the Bride of the Persian Gulf. Its authorities say the island is already a hub for Iranian travelers, but they say they seek to turn it into a regional tourist magnet. Yusuf Jalali from Kish Island.
This is IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight. The pillars of U.S. supremacy are shaking as emerging economies are developing in a rapid pace. In this regard, we have taken a look at the world media to know their idea about this issue. Stay tuned. The website of Middle East Eye wrote, "The world order is fading away, and there is still no clear idea about the next one. It took just 30 years. The Cold War ended, but a warm peace lasted barely a decade. The pillars of the U.S.-led rules-based world order, neoliberalism, free market economy, unregulated finance, and globalization are now all in question. At the dawn of the 21st century, history and nature began to assertively reclaim their prerogatives from an overconfident and hubristic humanity. The events of 9/11 and the long American wars in Iraq and Afghanistan tarnished the unipolar leadership of the U.S. regime and its military superiority. Pax Americana has been in retreat ever since. The 2008 global financial crisis raised doubts about a greedy, speculative, over-financialized, and under-regulated economy. The fallout has been harsh austerity measures, spreading massive inequality. The latest data from the U.S. and U.K. are chilling. Long-lasting monetarist economic theories have been cast aside, while printing money has become the new normal in the U.S. and EU. Blind trust in the market's balancing role, the so-called invisible hand, has been shaken. Financial bailouts and the COVID-19 pandemic have shown that a visible hand, that of the state, is necessary. Neoliberal politicians, economists, and pundits have suddenly forgotten what they have been preaching for decades. China has slowly awoken and reclaimed the role it had for the overwhelming part of the last two millennia as the world's leading economic power. And it has gone even further, becoming an impressive technological power, with examples including 5G, artificial intelligence, and quantum computing, and an expanding military power. This has sent alarm bells ringing in Washington. The U.S. was shocked by China's rise and remains unwilling to share its long-established global hegemony. Reading the tea leaves correctly is thus crucial, but the Western media has already gotten it wrong in coverage of the recent Shanghai Cooperation Organization summit, obsessively searching for a split between China and Russia, when the real news was the long queue of countries willing to join the organization. Iran and Belarus have been admitted, and others could soon be added, including Egypt, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Bahrain, Kuwait, and the UAE. Incidentally, they are all allies and partners of the U.S. While it is true that Moscow and Beijing hold different views on many issues, the die is cast. They are on the same boat, with even the economists recognizing this fact. A key event is set to take place in China next month, when Xi Jinping is expected to be reappointed as the country's top leader for an unprecedented third mandate that could pave the way for his nomination for life. And in November, the U.S. midterm elections will determine whether the Biden administration can carry on its ambitious agenda, both inside and outside the country. A week later, the G20 summit in Indonesia will show how relations are evolving among the Global South and Global North blocs. What is clear now is that globalization is crumbling. As Zoltan Potsar of Credit Suisse masterfully summarized, globalization was fueled by cheap gas from Russia to Europe and cheap products from China to the U.S., which sustained the American consumerist dream. The system also relied on American financial dominance, built upon the U.S. dollar as the global reserve currency. And for decades, it was gifted with low inflation and zero interest rates. This situation is no more. U.S. financial hegemony is less tolerated, as the dollar has been excessively weaponized against anyone who does not align with Washington's positions. The main keywords now are decoupling and reshoring in the face of increasingly disrupted global supply chains. Cut off from Russia's cheap energy, Europe is adopting far more expensive alternatives. The US and China are increasingly decoupling from each other without even asking what impacts could follow from the cut off of supply chains and financial flows. The website of Global Times said, "The world today is undergoing accelerating changes unseen in a century and has entered a new phase of uncertainty and transformation. Human society has reached a crossroads and faces unprecedented challenges. Under these new conditions, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, as an important constructive force in international and regional affairs, should keep itself well-positioned in the face of changing international dynamics and better assume its historical mission. Countries should enhance mutual support and work together to cope with complex changes in external environment. In today's world, conflicts are looming large between unity and division, cooperation and confrontation. The SCO is under great test in maintaining regional peace and security, and its member states face severe challenges in maintaining their own security and stability. Only by strengthening high-level exchanges and a strategic communication, deepening mutual understanding and political trust, guarding against attempts by external forces to instigate color revolution, and jointly opposing interference in other countries' internal affairs under any pretext, can countries safeguard their security and development interests and hold their future firmly in their own hands." Countries should expand security cooperation and jointly uphold long-term peace and stability in the region. Over the years, with an eye on common security, the SCO member states have carried out practical and efficient security cooperation, which has ensured the overall security and stability in the region. Amid a complex and volatile regional security landscapes, it is all the more important to stay true to the vision of common, comprehensive, cooperative, and sustainable security and build a balanced, effective, and sustainable security architecture, constantly upgrade the level of law enforcement and security cooperation within the SCO, and strictly prevent terrorist and extremist forces from destabilizing regional security. Countries need to deepen practical cooperation to materialize a shared vision of development and rejuvenation. Common development is real development, and sustainable development is a good development. All SCO countries are at a crucial stage of development. They should leverage their unique strengths of geographical proximity and intertwined interest. They should uphold the vision of innovative, coordinated, green, open, and shared growth to achieve integrated regional economic development, energize growth, vitality, and deliver a better life to their people. Countries should enhance people-to-people and cultural exchanges to consolidate public support for the long-term development of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Consolidate public support for the long-term development of the SCO. The most solid foundation for SCO's development lies in mutual learning among civilizations, and the most profound strength lies in people-to-people ties. They need to promote exchanges, dialogue, and harmonious coexistence among different civilizations, deepen cooperation in such areas as education, science and technology, culture, health, media, radio, and television, and build bridges of mutual understanding and amity between the people. Countries should uphold multilateralism and work together to make the international order more just and equitable. As a Chinese saying goes, power may win for the time being, but justice will prevail for the long run. Faced with power politics, bullying, and hegemonic practices, the SCO should assume its due international responsibility by safeguarding the UN-centered international system and the international order based on international law, promoting the common values of humanity, expanding SCO's exchanges with other international and regional organizations such as the UN, and improving global governance so as to make greater contributions to world peace and development. Over the years, with its own development, China has propelled the development of countries in the region, brought more benefits to people around the world, and continuously injected vigorous impetus into the SCO development. China proposed initiatives such as the Belt and Road Initiative, BRI, and a community with a shared future for mankind have been included in the outcome documents of the SCO mechanism. Its proposals, such as the Global Development Initiative and the Global Security Initiative, have also been highly praised by leaders of various parties within the SCO. At the summit, China called for continued efforts to achieve the complementarity of the BRI with national development strategies and regional cooperation initiatives. This call has received active response from relevant parties who agreed that the BRI is an important engine for building a community with a shared future for mankind. Building on past achievements, countries should continue to act in the Shanghai spirit, work for the steady development of the SCO, and jointly build the region into a peaceful, stable, prosperous, and beautiful home.
Sheikh Baqir Sharif Al-Qarashi decides to compile.
So we can consider Sayyid Hadi Khosrow Shahi.
Shahid Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr.
He was born in Kadhimiya.
The first and the most important thing that we can learn from Allama Tabatabai is his great effort.
In this regard, I should like to say that one of the great benefits of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmoud Shahrudi was.
When we look at the works of late Rawzati,
there is a famous sentence from Mirza Khalil Qamarani that he says in Farsi, "Tuhid kalame baraye kalame tuhid."
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in the teacher.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program The Teacher, an introduction into the lives and works of the most outstanding Muslim Shia scholars and ulama all across the world of Islam. I am Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Mahdavi and Sheikh Ziyanya. Sheikh Ziyanya, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
And Sheikh Mahdavi, assalamu alaikum to you.
Wa alaykum assalam wa rahmatullahi.
For today's discussion, we want to talk about a Muslim Shiite mutakallim and mujtahid, Sayyid Hassan Husseini Lavasani, the author of the magnum opus Nurul Afham, which is a book regarding the ilm of kalam. Before getting to this book and his main research methodology in this book, I'll be happy this time with Sheikh Mahtavi. Give us some information about the early life and a scholarly life of Sayyid Hassan Husseini Lavasani.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Sayyid Hassan Husseini Lavasani is one of the great ulama, being born in 1308 according to lunar calendar. As we know, when we're talking about the ulama, usually the field of studies they are expert in will come after their name. So for this great alim, we can say, besides being a mujtahid, meaning expert in deducing their ahkam al-sharia, or the rulings of Islam, he was also one of the great mutakallimin theologians.
Yes.
So we must consider this as one of his expertise. He's born in Najaf, and then when he was 22 years old, started to participate in the advanced level of fiqh usul, meaning dars kharij al fiqh, with one of the great scholars of the Hawza, who is Akhund Khurasani, the author of the book Kifayatul Usul. Nowadays, every talibe or every student of the seminary school is familiar with this title, Akhund Khurasani. He had this chance to stay with Akhund Khurasani, starting his advanced level when he was 22 years old. Among his asatid, or the scholars, we may also name Sayyid Yazdi, who is the author of Urwatul Wuthqa, and also Sheikh al-Shari'i Isfahani. And among his works, we can name a list of the works which are concerned with history, yes, theology, fiqh, and usul, and different field of the studies in Hawza, or topics, Islamic or religious topics.
Okay.
Yeah.
Upon the order of Sayyid Abul Hassan al-Isfahani and Mirza Naini, he went to Lebanon, to the south of Lebanon, in order to serve the Shias over there, isn't it? And it says that for 22 years he resided over there.
Yes.
That's all right. Sheikh Ziyaniya, let's get to his main field of study, that is Ilm al-Kalam. And in fact, Nurul Afham was compiled in this field of study. First, give us some explanation regarding the field of Kalam. What is it exactly?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Ilm al-Kalam is one of the fields in Islamic studies in which students, or those ones who are following the school of thought of Ahlul Bayt al-Masat wa Salam, try to understand the argumentations and reasons to first of all understand why they have accepted this school of thought as the true school of thought, and secondly defend this school of thought.
You mean Ilm al-Kalam does not exist in the Sunni school of thought?
No, I do not mean this, but Ilm al-Kalam in each school of thought, for example, a Sunni scholar follows Ilm al-Kalam in a way that he be able to defend his mindset. So, for example, Ghazi Abdul Jabbar al-Mu'tazili is one of the well-known scholars in theology or Ilm al-Kalam from school of thought of Sunnism. He tries to defend this school of thought. So we have Ilm al-Kalam again in Sunnism, or we have Ilm al-Kalam also in Christianity, but each scholar in Ilm al-Kalam tries to defend his ideology. And so there are two steps. First of all, in Ilm al-Kalam, there are two steps. First of all, you have to prove that your school of thought is the one that is the true one. And secondly, you bring some argumentations to defend your school of thought.
Okay.
And some scholars, they add the third step, that is, they try to break the argumentations of other schools of thought or other religions or other, you know, ideologies.
So
this pack, this pack is the total concept of Ilm al-Kalam or theology.
So Ilm al-Kalam can also answer the questions and doubts of the other religions out of the religion of Islam too?
Yes. Okay. Basically, yes. Mm-hmm. Because in Enmul Kalam, first of all, we discuss about the being of God and the existence of God. Uh-huh. And then we try to prove that God is one and is unique.
Tawheed.
And that is Tawheed. Okay. And then we discuss about his justice, and then about the day of resurrection, and then about prophecy and imamate. Okay. So these five that are pillars of, you know, our religion mm-hmm. are the things
according
that,
to the Shia beliefs.
Yes.
Okay.
According to the Shia beliefs, these five are the pillars of our school of thought. So if we prove these five correctly, mm-hmm. then we have no way out but to be a Shia.
That's all right.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah. La ilaha illallah.
So here, Sayyid Lavasani helps us with Nur al-Afham in order to better understand the pillars of Islam according to the Shia beliefs.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. That's all right. And each category, these five categories, has their own details, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
And a person has to be, I think, very much expert regarding different fields of studies. For example, how Tawheed is defined, or what is the adl of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, or what is prophethood, isn't it? So many doubts and questions can be posed regarding all these pillars.
So we have to take into consideration that this book is mainly a commentary of the author on two books of one of the great asatid, whose name is Sayyid Tabatabai, from the descendants of Sayyid Ali Ghaye Tabatabai, the author of Riyadul Masail. And those two books are named like this: Misbahud Dalam Fi Usul al-Din. Mm-hmm. Another book is Ilmul Kalam. These two books has been commented or were interpreted by Sayyid Hassan Husseini Lawasani and put in the shape of one book consisting of two volumes, okay, having almost 1,000 pages. As you said, and my brother also mentioned, Sheikh Diyainia, the author of the book is trying to deal with the five pillars mm-hmm. of Usuluddin, and all in all details. So to have a book containing 1,000 pages talking about these five pillars, so you have to make sure that every single point in terms of the Kalam and theology will be discussed and responded. Mm-hmm. So that even that's why we see that the title of the book itself is talking about this Nurul Afham Fi Ilm al-Kalam.
That's right.
The lights of understandings regarding the knowledge of mm-hmm. the science of theology.
Theology, that's right.
Yes.
So it is a light to the understanding. It is like we can say lantern for those who want to be familiar more with Ilmul Kalam. Okay,
that's right. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, an introduction to that. After this book was published, Sheikh Muhammad Taqi Qumi sent a letter of admiration. Also, Sayyid Muhsin al-Hakim and Sayyid Abul Qasim al-Khoui offered this book to be taught, we can say, in the houses. What books regarding the Ilmul Kalam are nowadays taught in the houses? What is the most famous one?
Different books.
Hello, based on the Wasqa is a Kalami book?
No. That is the Fiqh book.
Fiqh book.
Yes, that is the Fiqh
book.
What
is the most outstanding Kalami book?
Muhadarat by Ayatollah Sistani is one of the books being taught in the advanced levels of the Hawza. Mm-hmm. But at the beginning, they are taking different books because, alhamdulillah, we are provided with a bunch of books mm-hmm. with regard to the Kalam. So we have the Amuzish Aqaid written by Ayatollah Misbah. Rahmatullah alayh.
Yes.
And this book also has been translated into English as well. Mm-hmm. So our listeners may take benefit from this, which is available in Islam.org.
Okay.
And other different books regarding the Kalam, is being discussed and taught.
Also, the comparative studies between two religions are in this field, isn't it, Ilm al-Kalam? For example, if you want to know, I don't know, what is Christianity or Christian or Jewish ideas regarding, for example, prophethood,
From the viewpoint of the theology, yes, because even you may take into the religions based on the different things. So based on the history, their generation, their fiqh or rulings, the sharia, but based on their theology, the way you are proving this religion to be right, yes, it could be classified under the theology itself to have a comparative study over different because we have great theologian from Jews and Christians.
That's right. Okay. Anything, Miss Sheikh?
Something we have to take it in serious consideration is that Sayyid Hassan Husseini Lavosani resided his final years in Tehran, and he, you know, authored this book while his he was residing in Tehran. And you know, those 22 years that he was preaching and, you know, doing his best to spread the voice of Ahlul Bayt wassalam, in Lebanon led him to this point that he has to compile a book regarding theology to defend this school of thought. So, because he had this experience, this book should be a book that is really beneficial for Islamic seminaries, so that late Ayatollah Khoui suggested this book to be a text to be studied and to be taught in Islamic seminaries.
That's all right. Thank you very much, Sheikh Ziyani and Sheikh Mahtavi. Jamadi Usani 25th, 1400, according to the lunar Hijri calendar. This outstanding man passed away in Tehran. And according to his last will and testament, his body was taken to Mashhad and he was buried in Ravaq Darul Zuhd, in the holy shrine of Imam Reza alayhi salam, in the city of Mashhad. May Allah bless the soul of this outstanding man, Sayyid Hassan Husseini al-Lavasani, the author of his magnum opus, Nurul Afham fi Ilm al-Kalam. It was very kind of you, and thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/en, Call of Islam, page. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي حسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.